How can faith and reason work together? Are they somehow mutually exclusive? What role do facts and evidence play in the Christian faith? This is Reasonable Faith, Conversations with Dr. William Lane Craig. I'm Kevin Harris, and today we're talking about God's relationship to time. And what exactly is time? And I want to remind you that there are many resources just like this podcast available at reasonablefaith.org. Transcripts and recordings of Dr. Craig's debates on college campuses around the world, articles, questions and answers, a discussion forum, and much more. Available now at reasonablefaith.org. Dr. Craig, one of the drawbacks of being a philosopher is that you don't get a lot of sleep sometimes. There are some issues that keep you up at night. One of the issues that tends to keep me up at night, some of the issues of God and his relationship to time. And what time is. You have some articles on reasonablefaith.org that people can refer to. You've written on God, time, and eternity. Let's unpack this a little bit. What are some of the issues that we explore when we consider God and time?
Well, I agree with you, Kevin, that this is one of the most mind-boggling, mind-expanding topics that a person can talk about. Next to the concept of God himself, I think the concept of time is the most mind-stretching issue that a person can reflect upon. So when you put God and time together, you've got a subject that you could study for the rest of your life. I think some of the key issues that will arise here will be the nature of divine eternity. Should we think of God as timeless, that is to say, transcending time? God would have no temporal location, no temporal duration. Or should we rather think of God as enduring throughout all time, from infinite time in the past to infinite time in the future? That would be a key issue. Related to that question will be the question of the nature of time itself. And here the debate is whether time is dynamic or whether time is static. That is to say, is the difference between past, present, and future a real objective difference? Is temporal becoming real? Do things actually come into being and pass out of being as time goes on? Or is rather time sort of like a spatial dimension, like a yardstick, and the events in time are like the inches on the yardstick, and they're all equally real. They're all there, so that the events in 2050 are just as real as the events in 2000, and those are just as real as the events in 1950. And what is present is just a matter of your location on the yardstick, so to speak. For the people at the year 2000, the events in 2050 are future, and the events in 1950 are past. But for the person in 2050, those events are present, and the events in 2000 are past. That's a fundamental question in the philosophy of time, whether time is dynamic, or what is sometimes called tensed, or whether time is static or tenseless, and that will impact how you understand God's relationship to time. And then there are a host of other issues, whether time is a relationship among events, or whether time is a substance, a thing in itself, whether time has a kind of intrinsic measure to it, or is the measure something that is just conventional that we make up? The whole special theory of relativity comes in here. Are there relations of absolute simultaneity among events, or is simultaneity relative? Just lots of issues like that.
Interesting. And each one of these could be explored. Volumes have been written on each one of these. One of the things that interested me when I read your book, in the first chapter, you talk about the difficulty of defining time without being circular.
Right, exactly. What is time? One student wrote on his philosophy exam, time is a weekly news magazine. Well, that's one definition. Another definition I saw for time was the time is what keeps everything from happening at once. And when it's you think
bad.
About it, that's not a bad definition. Time is a sort of dimension of reality that is ordered according to an earlier than, later than relation. And as such, that distinguishes time from space. Space is related by relation, or points in space are related by a betweenness relation. For any three points in space, or at least on a line, spatial line, X, Y, and Z, one of those points will be between the other two points. But time, in addition to having that betweenness relation, also has this relation of earlier than and later than. For two points in time, one will be later than the other, and the other will be earlier than the other. And there's nothing like that in space. So that would be a unique and defining feature of time.
Yeah, and because if you were to say, well, time is endurance, well, then you want to know what endurance is. And, well, endurance is time, so you go around in a circle. So I've heard as well that time is a can be seen as a measurement of change.
Yeah, that was Aristotle's. That was Aristotle's idea, and I myself like that very much. Now, Newton, the great father of modern physics, Isaac Newton, had a different view. Newton thought that it made sense to talk about time flowing and going on, even if the world were completely empty and there was nothing happening. Even if you had, say, just empty space and there was nothing happening, no events, he still thought time would be flowing. But I find myself more in agreement with the view that in the absence of any events at all, there wouldn't be relations of earlier and later. You would just have a timeless state.
A completely changeless state.
Yes.
There would be no time. There would be nothing to measure. There would be no later than or earlier than.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything would just be a sort of timeless state of affairs.
What about the A theory of time and the B theory of
time? Well, I've avoided that technical nomenclature, but what I described as dynamic theory of time would be the so-called A theory, and the static theory would be the so-called B theory. Those labels of A and B, which are very convenient, come from a British philosopher named John McTaggart, Ellis McTaggart, who lived back around the first part of the 20th century, and he wrote a very famous essay called The Unreality of Time, and he distinguished these two theories of time. One is the A theory, and this is the theory that says that things are really present, past, or future. This is an objective feature of reality, not just an illusion of human consciousness. That's the A theory. Then the B theory would be the view that all events in time are equally real, and the difference between past, present, and future is just an illusion of human consciousness. On the B theory, now is sort of like here. There is no objective place in the universe called here. Here is wherever the speaker happens to be. Right now, here is in Dallas. But when I'm in Atlanta, then Dallas is there.
Yeah.
And Atlanta is here. But when I'm in Dallas, Dallas is here and Atlanta is there. But there is no objective here or there in the universe. That's just a subjective perspective of a person. And similarly, on the B theory, now, they would say, is just where the speaker is, or when he is, rather. It represents his standpoint, but there really is no objective now in the world. All moments in time are equally real.
Where do you stand on that? Are you an A man or a B man?
I'm a pretty ardent A theorist, Kevin. I think that the B theory has formidable philosophical objections against it. I think it also has very serious theological objections. I find it very difficult to understand how a Christian could be a B theorist of time for a number of reasons. And then I also think that the A theory simply accords with our experience of time. We all experience the presentness of time, and I see absolutely no reason to think that this is a gigantic delusion that has been foisted upon us. I see no reason to think this is illusory.
We hear philosophers of time talk about only this moment now is real. The past is gone. It's no longer accessible. It's no longer real. The future hasn't occurred yet, so it's not real. Only this present moment.
That would be a version of the A theory or dynamic theory of time that is called presentism. And presentism would say that of all times, only the present time is real, in just the way you described. And I favor that view. I think that's right. I don't think that the future exists. I don't think the past exists any longer. That what exists is what presently exists in terms of time. Now, the opposing perspective to presentism is usually called eternalism, which would be the view that all moments in time are equally real, and that the present is in no way privileged. For people in 1950, that moment is present. For people in 2050, that moment is present. There is no absolute present.
Seems the A theory of time would preclude any time travel. There's nothing to go back to,
yeah,
and there's nothing to go forward to.
That's exactly right. There's nowhere to go. So I think that's true, and it's very interesting when you look at the literature on time travel. Inevitably, those who defend time travel are B theorists, people who think that all moments in time are equally real and that therefore you can kind of go back and forth in time. And I frankly, Kevin, I love time travel movies. Movies like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, that's one of my favorite because it's the most consistent. Or movies like Back to the Future. But it's a little frustrating because most time travel movies are not consistent. You can tell that the writers who did them really don't understand time travel because they have things like changing the future or changing the past. And that's impossible. You can't do that. That's logically impossible to do. But Bill
and
Ted's,
you can't go back and kill your own grandmother.
That's right.
Then you wouldn't exist
in order to go back and kill her.
Yeah,
exactly.
So that's an absurdity. It's a contradiction, and that tends to, well, number one, argue for an A theory of time, and then also argue against time travel, it would seem.
Well, that is an argument that many people have used against time travel, is that if time travel were possible, then why couldn't you go back in time and kill your grandmother before you were born? I mean, what keeps you from pulling the trigger?
And even if you didn't go back in time and kill her, the very fact that you could seems to negate it.
Right, you know? Right. So that is one of the arguments that is often used.
But you were talking about Bill and Ted's Adventure.
Oh, yeah. What's so great about that movie is that it's consistent. For example, they don't try to change the future like they did in Back to the Future, where the photograph is fading out. In Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, you have Bill and Ted in jail or needing to get out, and they say, well, I know what we can do. We can go back in time and leave the key here so that we can get out. And he says, okay, where would we leave it? And the key says, well, under the wastebasket. And then they look, and there it is, because they know they're going to come back and leave it there, you know. And that's perfectly consistent. They don't change the past, but you have effects in the past from things that are going to happen in the future. And when the future comes, they'll need to go back and put that key there.
That is just fascinating. Now, when it comes to God and time, a problem that you've worked on, Dr. Craig, is God's relationship to time, and that is when He created the universe and time came into existence. The eternal God somehow entered into time. And does that mean that he is no longer timeless? Therefore, he's changed, but God is supposed to be changeless. So how do you work it out?
Well, boy, you're raising very profound issues here. This is the view that I ultimately came to, that I felt made the most sense of the data. And that is that God is timeless without creation. That is, see, imagine God existing alone, just the three members of the Trinity, no universe, nothing else besides God. God existing alone without creation is timeless. But with creation, that is, from the moment of creation forward, God exists in time. And so my view is a kind of hybrid view that qualifies God's temporality based upon whether or not there is a temporal universe to which he is really related. And the classical defenders of divine timelessness, like Thomas Aquinas, could avoid God's temporality only by denying that God stands in any real relation to the universe. They said that when God creates the world, he doesn't stand in any new relationship to the universe, like being Lord over the universe or being the cause of the universe. Aquinas said those relations exist only in our minds. And I find that to be utterly, utterly implausible. If anything is a real relation, surely the causal relation is a real relation. And God is the cause of the universe, and he coexists with the universe. So it seems very clear to me that he has a real relationship to a temporal world. But if that's the case, then it would seem to me that God would be temporal from the moment of creation on.
When you say that God coexists with the universe, would that be the view that it would come out of Aquinas' view? Because obviously God is prior to the universe.
Well, he's causally prior to the universe, but he would not be chronologically prior to the universe. That is to say, he is the cause of the universe. He explains why the universe exists. But if time begins at the moment of creation, then there is no before creation. So God isn't before creation
because before in a temporal sense. Is an indication of time.
Exactly. So to say that God existed before time would be a self-contradiction.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's causally prior, but not chronologically prior to the existence of the world.
I've heard an illustration that you give about a bowling ball in a cushion,
mm-hmm.
and that there's a simultaneous cause and effect, the bowling ball depressing into the cushion.
Right.
Is that part of your thinking on this, to show the simultaneity of cause and effect?
Yes. Yes, it does relate to this. It shows that a cause doesn't have to be chronologically prior to its effect. It can be simultaneous with it. The depression or the concave shape of the cushion is not the cause of the balls being round. The heavy balls being round is the cause of the concave depression in the cushion. And yet, the ball could have been theoretically resting on the cushion from eternity past, so that the cause and the effect are not chronologically related to each other. They're both simultaneous. And I would say in exactly the same way, God as the cause of the universe is simultaneous with the origin of the universe. His creating the universe occurs at the same moment at which the universe comes into being.
That's just the moment of creation.
It is. That's the moment of creation, the moment at which God says, let there be, and the universe springs into being.
Now, people can go to the website and wrestle with your essay and some articles on this that will uncover all of the aspects and the considerations of this.
Right. I worked on this question for 13 years. Kevin, this was my major research focus for 13 years, and there's 6 books that float out of this work, and there are articles on the website, both scholarly articles as well as popular articles on God and time. And you know, it's so funny, Kevin, like so many of the things I work on, they seem so abstract and unreal and philosophical, and yet over and over again, I find these issues coming up in debates, in evangelism, in talking with people about Christianity.
And in my 6-year-old.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, when Cody was 6 years old, he asked questions about this.
Hmm.
What in the world was God doing all that time before he created?
Yeah.
You know? So don't think at all that this is just the stuff for top shelf academia. We all think about this.
I find this over and over again, that it has practical application.
My son said when he was 5 years old, Dad, how can God just have always been? He never started. That worries me. And he had this little frown on his face. I said, you little philosopher.
Wow.
And so another consideration, a lot of people think that time is abstract and not concrete. Would we consider time to be abstract or concrete?
Well, that depends on whether or not you think time is a substance. Is time a thing itself? Newton thought so. He thought that time and space are actual things, created things. And many modern physicists think this as well. In fact, they combine time and space into one single entity or substance called space-time. And space-time is a sort of four-dimensional continuum or four-dimensional manifold of points that they believe is a sort of fundamental physical reality. Matter and energy exist in space-time. So many people would think of time as a sort of concrete reality, or space-time as a concrete reality. I'm more disposed to the view we talked about earlier that thinks of time as a relation among events, and I think time is distinct from space. I think space-time is just a convenient way of thinking about time and space, where you can plot on a graph, one axis being time and the other axis being space. And then you can draw a line on the graph that would chart a thing's progress through space-time. But that's no more significant than a graph where one axis is temperature and the other axis is pressure, and you can draw a line showing that as the pressure increases, the temperature goes up. But nobody would think there's a thing, an entity called temperature pressure. It's just a graphical or diagrammical way of displaying the relationship between pressure and temperature. And I think that the same is true of the relationship between space and time. I think these are quite distinct.
Our question of the day, Dr. Craig, what about the young Earth, old Earth controversy? Christians tend to be divided on how old the universe is or how old the Earth is.
I think that we as Christians need to realize that we are involved in a much broader battle with secularism than to be fighting with each other over this issue. We need to recognize that we are fundamentally allies in the cultural battle against secularism that would take over our public square and exclude God and religion from the public life. And therefore, these discussions between us ought to be carried out privately in civility and goodwill. We shouldn't be denouncing one another. I think we need to have a big tent philosophy and to have our attention focused outward to a world that desperately needs to hear the gospel, rather than inward and fighting with each other.
For more resources like these from Dr. William Lane Craig, go to reasonablefaith.org. That's reasonablefaith.org.